There's a $50 winged Servum.
There is not a Servum action figure.
Am I doing it? Am I buying a Servum figure for $50? Is that, it'll be shipped in 12 weeks, apparently. Put it above my desk.
Did you buy it?
No, I'm tempted. Why is there a figure? Why am I tempted to buy it? Stay tuned.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Podzilla. This is your family-friendly family-friendly. We're friends with all of your families. We try to be family-friendly. Whether your family thinks of us as friends, totally up to them. The show where we try and cover all Godzilla content in order of release. My name is Micah. I'm here with my G-Force co-host and co-member in the Force.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm Jay Shaw. I'd also like to think of myself as family friendly. It's good to be here.
You're more friendly family. To me, at least.
And we are, we're on Monster Island like we usually are, recording Podzilla. We're in the Podzilla department, the P-Force, as we're jokingly called here. And, I mean, you all heard last episode, we had Slim assigned to also join us over here at P-Force.
Yeah, recent addition to Podzilla.
Yeah, unfortunately, he was here for a few days with us. We had some fun, had some laughs, had some a lot of beef jerky, actually. That was really good. But there's been this strange thing happening around the island with little like pools of liquid metal almost.
It's like mercury or something.
Yeah, it's real weird. And he stepped in some of it and his whole freaking leg started turning to metal. So G-Force promptly shipped him off and we have no clue where he is. So it's just us here, Podzilla.
Yeah.
The two of us, like the old days.
Yeah, it feels normal now that we're, now that we have true sausage sizzle believers back where they should be.
Now that we're family friendly again. All's right with the world.
Now all is right. Jumping in, Jason, do you mind if I just start off straight off the bat with some news?
Go for it.
We didn't say some last episode, but I've got a good few little tidbits here. Jason, you would have heard. We got a trailer for this Minecraft Godzilla DLC.
It's officially out now. We talked about it a couple episodes ago. It has officially been released. It's a lot more than we thought was going to be included.
Yeah, I think I expected it to just be some sort of like, I don't know, skin pack, maybe a world with some Godzilla statues in. But no, this is like a full-fledged game. There was a full trailer that came out. And from my understanding, this is $13. And it's comprised of four different game modes. We have one, Fleeing from Godzilla. This is like...
That's the game mode name?
They don't have specific names. Well, I haven't bought it yet. Where you're trying to escape him, trying to run through the city out of his destruction.
Yeah.
There's a mode where you have to contain his destruction and stop him destroying the city by speed building, almost trapping him within certain streets with some weapons. There's a versus mode where you, playing as one of your favorite Godzilla kaiju, converse another, which is wild that this is the most recent game we've had where you converse another kaiju. The last was like on the Wii.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the PS4.
I think there was a recent Godzilla game for the PS4, but then there were all the Pipeworks trilogy for the older consoles.
Mm. And then there's this photography mode, which I know you're going to be a huge fan of.
Something that took me by surprise, was that, because I thought this initially was just going to be a Godzilla X Kong The New Empire tie-in and just be solely MonsterVerse stuff. Mm. But from the trailer and from what I've seen, it's every era of Godzilla. Like all the Showa monsters are showing up. Megaguirus, I think, shows up in that Godzilla like wave survival kaiju battle mode. So there's a little bit of everything. I think that mode when you're defending the city against Godzilla, you're going up against Shin Godzilla and he's evolving through his different forms. So it actually seems like a lot of heart and a lot of like effort has been put into it to make it a cool game for people who, that are into Godzilla to appreciate. Are we going to get it? Are we getting Godzilla Minecraft DLC?
I want to jump on tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Jayshu, you and me, hit me up.
Okay.
That's not the only gaming related news we have.
That's all this show is. That's all this news segment is. I think we need to rename this news segment to gaming
Godzilla
news.
Gaming segment. Jayshu, yeah. You remember a little title with the name of Godzilla X Kong Titan Chasers?
Yeah. Yes. We need to talk about Titan Chasers.
Well, yeah, please. Let's do it. Give it to me.
Well, I mean, Titan Chasers was announced as a Monsterverse tie-in game when you're playing as Titan Chasers. Seems like your classic run-of-the-mill microtransaction heavy, like iPhone app, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't meant to come out until later this year. Everywhere I'm seeing online says pre-order Titan Chasers to be able to play it in like April or May or whenever it releases.
I was getting like Instagram ads and for this.
Yeah.
Up the wazoo.
And then you were telling me like you'd come around here and be like, hey, here's an Instagram ad that I'm getting for Titan Chasers saying I can download it and play now. And then when you'd click that, it goes to like a fake third party app that isn't the real Titan Chasers app.
Like thousands of people have rated this and downloaded it, say it's awesome. Yes. I tried download it.
It's a scam.
Can't do anything.
Is this game even real at this point?
A trailer came out. It was a 30-second trailer that showed dialogue between human characters and Godzilla and an alpha skull crawler.
Dialogue between them?
Not between Godzilla and the alpha skull crawler.
Not
they
like
were just standing in the city and... That needs to be a thing. And the humans just been like, whoa, I haven't seen an alpha skull crawler in this area before. Literally nothing else.
That's the trailer.
That was it. That's the trailer.
I think this is some sort of scam. Some sort of money laundering scheme. Pre-order this game.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Put in your email address. We're going to send that off on the dark web. I'm scared, frankly. When does it come out? It's supposed to be out like around Godzilla X Kong, right?
I didn't even know, dude. I didn't bother scrolling down to see the release date. Jayshu, have you heard of Dave the Diver?
More gaming news.
More gaming news. It's not over yet.
I have heard of Dave the Diver only because Godzilla's apparently getting added to the game. Is this like some sort of indie darling?
It was like marketed as an indie darling. It's not made by an indie company. To the point where the Game Awards happened and it got nominated in an indie category.
Did it really?
And the creators were like, guys, this is made by a huge team of people. they showed a teaser trailer for a Godzilla, wildly enough, crossover that was happening. We see brief snippets of Dave.
The diver?
I assume it's the diver. Fishing out on the boat. And then out of the water rises, burning Godzilla. And we see, like, as it's fading to black, the camera pans to the right, and we see Ibira.
Ibira's in the game,
in
too.
In the ocean. The game's, like, about...
My gosh.
My understanding is it's about getting fish and fighting sea creatures for your sushi shop.
Yeah.
So I am hoping... I'm going to play this. I'm going to hopefully make some Ibira sushi.
Because that's what's strange is I think one of those rules we talked about, like Toho has their Godzilla rules of certain things you can't do with a character. I think one of the rules is like Godzilla can't be eaten. Like, I think that's one of the weird things they've said.
Yeah.
So, man, is this game going to be the first game to officially let you eat Godzilla in your sushi shop? Godzilla sushi?
Who knows? I will come back to us and let you all know.
It is just wild how many video games Godzilla's showing up in. He's absolutely...
There's been a resurgence.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice to see.
Yeah. Who's going to be next? Monster Hunter, please.
Oh, please. Did you end up reading any of Godzilla Here There Be Dragons?
No. This is the graphic novel series of... Ye old pirates meeting Godzilla.
Yeah, so 5-issue miniseries announced, and 5 issues were released last year. Lots of pirate ships. It follows Sir Francis Drake.
Hey, does it?
Coming across Monster Island, I believe, and fighting a bunch of the different kaiju there, mainly Godzilla and Ibira. They announced that they're starting a Godzilla Here There Be Dragons 2, so a second 5-issue run.
Hey.
And it's going to focus on the Sons of Giants, a kaiju-worshipping secret society.
Interesting.
I've started buying some Godzilla graphic novels off of our local...
Yeah.
A local distributor.
We've got like a pop culture distributor here, Mighty Ape, that has just had so many like Godzilla memorabilia, action figures, comics added to it recently. I did see Here We Be Dragons. Here They Be Dragons is officially coming out soon, like the collected works.
Yeah.
So I might need to get my hand on some of those too.
Yeah, I might buy that as well. And the only other piece of news I have today, Jaysha, is that Minus One, its run in theaters has finally ended. So I'm going to tell you a couple stats here. It's officially the highest grossing Japanese live action film in the US.
Cool.
It's the second highest grossing Japanese film of all time in the US, not just live action.
Oh, whoa.
It's the third highest grossing international live action movie of all time in the US. Highest grossing international movie post-COVID. And the highest grossing international film, period, in 24 years.
The highest grossing international film.
In the past 24 years.
24 years. That's crazy. Yeah.
It's wild. I'm so happy it ended up doing like crazy numbers during its run. Everybody who's seeing it online has just been so vocal about how awesome it is. Not just the fact that a Godzilla movie is doing well, but it's a Godzilla movie that's breaking all of these numbers. It's just becoming so much more popular in the US, and I'm here for it.
I can't believe it's lasted this long in theaters, because if you remember way back to when it was first announced, I think it was going to be a real limited, like, outside of Japan run. Like, it was only going to be for a couple of weeks or a month or so, and it was only originally going to be in the US, and then they slowly distributed it out to different countries. I mean, we got it here in New Zealand. We got it here in our local cinema in our small city. And it's just gone on to have like the black and white re-release out for like, must be 4 months now. It's pretty impressive. It's really, really cool just to see how many people have gotten behind it, how much love it's been getting, breaking all the records, becoming Oscar nominated. Yeah, I'm excited. I hope that we'll be seeing like some news about potentially a sequel or like a new Toho Godzilla movie at some point soon, surely, right? With how well this has done.
Yeah, they're not going to stop anytime soon.
Hopefully it's not another like 8-year gap between Shin Godzilla and this. Hopefully we get, yeah.
Don't even say it. No. And jinx it. Knock on wood.
Within the year, we're going to see some news.
Jaysha, that's Mega News Lawn.
What's the game era news lawn. Well, this week we're talking about the second movie in the divisive Godzilla anime trilogy, Godzilla City on the Edge of Battle, released in 2018. This title means nothing to me. The City on the Edge of Battle.
That's right, the city on the edge of battle.
What does that mean? It's just a janky translation, right?
It's one of those classic Japanese names.
Because I think, I've got it here.
Have you seen like any of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Or like Evangelion names?
They're really convoluted when you translate them, right?
Japan just adds like random adjectives and numbers into these.
Well, it seems like the original Japanese title was Godzilla Battle Mobile Proliferation City. Which honestly isn't much better, but it makes more sense than the city on the edge of battle.
I have another translation for it. Godzilla Battle Mobile Breeding City.
The breeding city. Yeah. Crazy names.
The other one I had was Godzilla, the city mechanized for the final battle.
Even though it's the second movie in a trilogy.
Not the final war. Godzilla, the city mechanized for the second to last battle doesn't have the same ring to it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, this was directed by Koban Shizuno and Hiroyuki Sashita. And yeah, came out 2018 on Netflix. But I'll get into a bit of a recap for it, shall I?
Give me that recap.
The recap on the edge of the episode. Get ready.
Recap on the edge of the final battle. The breeding recap.
Gosh. In the aftermath of United Earth's defeat at the hands of Godzilla Earth, the survivors struggle to regroup and retreat. Haruo Sakaki awakens among the Hotua, a mysterious tribe of people covered in an orange dust-like substance. Bilu Saludo commander Galugu is elated to discover that the Hotua tribe's arrowheads are made of nanometal, the same metal that they used to create Mechagodzilla 20,000 years ago. Together, the remaining members of the Ground Force search for Mechagodzilla in the hopes of using it to defeat Godzilla once and for all. But they instead discover that Mechagodzilla has evolved into something much different than it was before. A fully functioning, nanometal-powered city. Mechagodzilla City, if you will. They're left with no other option than to try and use the city to trap Godzilla. But as they get closer to putting their plan into action, the Bilu Saludo start assimilating themselves into the nanometal, hoping to become one with Mechagodzilla and be left as the Earth's reigning monster once Godzilla dies. The confrontation between Godzilla and Mechagodzilla City is disastrous. As the Bilu Saludo continue to assimilate themselves, Godzilla adapts to survive the city, and Haruo and Yuko even start becoming one with the nanometal themselves. In the end, Godzilla emerges victorious, the city crumbles, and the endless cycle of destruction and sacrifice continues on in the city on the edge of battle, aka the Breeding City. Micah,
yo,
this movie's wild. This movie's crazy. First off, the bat, right? The poster?
Dude, did you see Mechagodzilla in the poster here?
Mechagodzilla in the poster.
I was hyped. I had my anime trilogy Mechagodzilla figurine out beside me while watching this movie. I'm like, this is the one he's going to be in.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed.
He was in the first movie more.
This movie came out the same year as Ready Player One. And the fact that the Toho Godzilla movie
with Mechagodzilla on the poster
has less Mechagodzilla than Ready Player One does. Wild.
Yeah, I'd always heard of Mechagodzilla City. Like, I've always heard that that's a thing in this trilogy. But for some reason, I just thought that it was separate to Mechagodzilla. And we're going to get like Mechagodzilla in Mechagodzilla City. But no, just Mechagodzilla City. Which was interesting. It was a cool plot. But yeah, this follows on pretty much directly after the first movie. In the after credits for Planet of the Monsters, we saw Haruo wake up and to see this strange woman who apparently has been living on Earth all this time, kind of like gasp, and then it faded to black.
Who's gasp?
What do you mean?
Oh.
The Hotua, the lady.
Sorry, I thought you meant this lady.
Gasp.
Kind of like gasp.
This lady like gasp, you know, gasp.
I know gasp.
That's what that lady was like. But yeah, this follows on from that, and everyone's kind of separated at the start. Haruo is with this tribe of people who are called the Hotua. Very interesting. People that have been surviving on Earth all this time, and they are kind of like our infant island stand-in, right?
Yeah. It's surmised by the Bilu Saludo that this is not a human evolution that has progressed over 20,000 years, but almost an insectoid race that has started to evolve and, like the rest of the Godzilla species on this planet, has progressed and evolved over time to try and fend off and protect against their surroundings.
Mm.
They've got, like, feather hair.
It's real interesting, and yeah, like moth dust all over them.
Oh, of course, they've got moth antenna. It's not feathers. It's moth antenna.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They've got like tribal tattoos, and then
oh my god, the shiny skin is like the Mothra dust.
Yeah,
I'm just getting
you
this
just,
now.
Yeah,
it's don't
just
mind me.
But they also like they call each other like baby chicks. Did you hear that? They're like, you hurt the baby chick. my sister.
Yeah.
And then they all apparently worship an egg, which we don't see during this movie.
No.
But there's a lot of foreshadowing. I hope that we do get Mothra potentially in the third movie.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. But yeah, it's a pretty cool take on Infernal and the Hotua, the egg. We get like two of the members of this tribe, two sisters, are kind of the main Hotua characters that we see throughout a lot of the movie. They've got pretty much the same name. I think it was like...
That is not true.
Miana and Maina?
Miana and Maina.
Exact same.
Maina glares a lot. And Miana is innocent.
Exact same name. Exact same copy of a character model.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was cool. Yeah, we got our twins. We got our Shobujin almost. We got Infant Island. We got some Mothra. And it's continuing to like make me really happy whenever I see these references and these adaptations they're bringing across from the old school Godzilla stuff into this new trilogy. Again, there's so much here for fans of the franchise. And I think they do it really well.
Yeah, like we said last episode, this whole anime trilogy is just such a departure from what we've known Godzilla to be over the past few years of doing this. The fact that not only have we gotten the most sci-fi story out there, but it's managed to reintroduce a lot of these themes that we know and love in real different ways. Like the fact that we have Shobujin in a movie that doesn't explicitly even say the name Mothra.
Yeah.
Is so weird, and I do kind of love it for that.
Yeah. And then the whole kind of driving force for the plot is the Hotua are discovered to be using nanometal tipped like arrows for their weapons. Mm-hmm. And then the Bulu Salado and the United Earth come to the conclusion that, hey, Mechagodzilla is probably still on this planet. And they got owned by Godzilla Earth last movie. This is probably their only chance at, like, beating him is to try and get Mechagodzilla working. Yeah. I thought that was such a cool plot for the movie, because it's something that they introduced, like, real briefly at the start of the last film, and it actually is coming full circle.
Yeah, and it's a real nice way to raise the stakes with Godzilla Phileas in the last movie, the change from that to Godzilla Earth. It's wondrous just how much the sense of scale and danger has increased, and them coming across this Godzilla city, it's like, oh yeah, they had nothing before, but this makes sense as a way to try and defeat him again. They've got new power and new technology on their side. As we come to see what Mechagodzilla and Mechagodzilla city actually does, It turns into like a tower defense game almost.
It is a tower defense game. They're waiting for Godzilla to rock up, and then they're going to let like the nanometal spears pop out of the ground, and then they're going to trap him with the nanometal gas.
They're working on the EMP harpoon, but they have to stop progression of that to try and build up their defenses first.
And they're like,
it's very gamified.
Yeah, Mechagodzilla City's like slowly spawning all their new items into like the command room. You got to wait for this to render, man. Come back
and
check in 2 days or use this many microtransaction money to make it happen faster. Yeah, it was pretty funny. But again, I just love the plot. I think it was such a cool idea, especially when the Bulu Salado start wanting to assimilate with the nanometal.
Yeah.
This film introduces the whole kind of idea that planets and civilizations, no matter what, will eventually give birth to monsters. Like a planet will eventually create its own monster, and how powerful that monster is depends on like the planet's ecosystem and the civilizations living in it.
Which in itself is a crazy, crazy idea as well.
Crazy. So the Bulu Salado actually like look up to humans because we were the cause of Godzilla Earth to be created, and because Godzilla Earth is such a huge threat, they kind of respect us in some way. Mm. But their hope is to use Mechagodzilla and become Mechagodzilla so that they can kill Godzilla Earth and then become like the monster that's ruling Earth.
Yeah.
Crazy.
If Earth is going to have a monster, it's like, of course, you would want to be the top of the food chain.
It'll be theirs, yeah.
I really loved that in this movie. I feel like when we were watching the first movie, you're a little bit hesitant about these two random alien races that have come up. But I feel like in this movie, they do a real job of not just making them seem like a purely evil force.
No.
when Godzilla Earth is starting to attack the Mechagodzilla city, you do see a lot of reasoning and a little bit of wisdom in the words and actions that these Blue Saluda are talking about. How it comes to a point where there are Blue Saluda volunteers who are willingly giving themselves up to Mechagodzilla City so that it can use their like brains as neural processing units so that the city can improve, so that they can defeat Godzilla.
Yeah.
And it ends up with this real nice hash out between these two parties. I think Yuko ends up like siding with the Blue Saluda for a little bit as well, which I loved to see.
Because we did get some character development in this film, at least I thought.
Tasha, Harua is not just a sadistic, mean, screechy boy anymore.
He's a lot less angry in this movie and a lot more like depressed. He's kind of just so sad that their attempt in the last movie was kind of for nothing. It wasn't the real Godzilla. And you get some moments, especially with him and Yuko, when they're just walking around Mechagodzilla City, kind of talking about their feelings. I think it was like, there was a line where Yuko's saying like, Haruo, you taught me that you can stay mad at what you can't forgive. Like, you're not supposed to just be all right with things that you can't forgive. And you see Yuko kind of come to terms with that in her own way, that thought. And yeah, she stands with the Blue Saluda even when Haruo's not sure on their big plan at the end. So it was interesting that it kind of gave them some character. You also get Haruo almost turning to the Exif and Mephites. I don't know what his actual name is. How do you pronounce it?
Mephites.
Yeah.
Mephites,
the Exif. But again, you got the Blue Saluda doing their own thing. You got the Exif kind of like praying to their god, and
that's which is absolutely going to come into play in the third movie.
Yeah, a lot of foreshadowing for that, which was cool, right? You saw these aliens become kind of their own unique
parties on this Earth here.
It was fleshed out a lot more than I was anticipating.
Yeah, I am curious at just how much of that is because there was almost a year gap in between these two movies. All these movies were released over like 2 or 3 years. And I think they used a lot of that time wisely. Like you said, Haruo, one of my favorite scenes is when he was, you know, thinking about his actions in the first movie and admitting that he does actually hold a grudge against Godzilla. And maybe that's not the best thing at this point.
No, he's really unsure of himself for a lot of the movie.
Yeah. The fact that he's thinking things over, I saw that as like a nice changing of his character development and trajectory in this movie. So I'm like, man, Toho is listening to what people are saying, and it's one of the perks of creating movies as you're seeing the public's reception to it, which is fantastic. And Jaisha, the one part of this movie I absolutely know that you love, budding romance.
Ooh, Yuko and Haruo get it on during this movie. I was very confused as well because she calls Grandpa, like Haruo's grandpa. So at the start of this movie, I was like, wait, have I just misread this whole situation? Are they actually like siblings or related in some way? But then a lot of this movie is put towards their romance kind of, and them falling for each other. And that's kind of the heart and soul of the middle portion of the movie, and especially towards the end when Yuko starts becoming assimilated with the nanometal. That's kind of our cliffhanger.
Do you feel that they did this romance well? This relationship well.
I think so. I fell for it. I mean, I'm a simple man, you know. I'm Team Haruo. He did another speech during this when like he's asking people, do you want to go back to the ship or do you want to stay?
Yeah, this was a good speech.
Another good speech from a man, Haruo. And I'm all on his side again. He needs some happiness, right? He needs someone like Yuko.
Yeah.
You didn't like romance in your Godzilla movie?
No, I do. I love Haruo in this. His speech is fantastic. The fact that he talked to all of his soldiers and like only 3 of them ended up returning to the mothership and they're all real embarrassed.
There's an idiot. There's one of them was just an idiot. When they see like the one of the Hotua, one of these guys in the army just like sprays his gun at her, like starts shooting her up. Even though he's just so stupid. He's shouting at Haruo every chance he gets. I was happy to see him go back to base. I was happy to see him leave. But I liked Haruo in this. I liked Yuko.
Yuko's all right.
Can
I list what Yuko does in this movie to you real quick?
Okay, yeah.
She sees Hiro with the Hotua.
Gets jealous.
And gets jealous.
Yep.
She promptly walks off into a bog filled with worm leech.
Servum worm type. Are what they called.
Servum worm types. Nearly dies because of it. calls Haruo's grandpa her grandpa.
Yeah.
Has one conversation with him and then kisses him.
Hey, but they've got a history. It was alluded to.
I don't feel like they do.
It was alluded to in the first movie that he was her captain, which I guess makes it a bit more inappropriate. But that aside, what you're telling me is you're on team Hotua. You wanted one of the Infant Island girls.
Haruoi.
That's how they pronounce Haruo.
Haruoi.
Oi.
Oi.
That's how she pronounces. No.
I do feel like what this movie does so much better than the first movie is it just gives all these characters a little more time to breathe, bit of room to breathe. In the first movie, we were struck with so much exposition at the start, and even when they came down to future Earth, the movie was almost at breakneck pace the entire time.
Mm.
It felt like no conversation happened that didn't immediately serve the plot. And it was nice to see, like, first 20, 30 minutes of this movie were just these rogue groups on Earth slowly getting together, slowly exploring and pondering about the Hotua.
And coming to face the terms of their situation almost, right?
Yeah, and thinking about the repercussions of what's happening. I will say things really struck up when we went underground into the Hotua home and saw Martin there.
Martin.
Professor Martin. He has a line here, which I love. He just randomly walks into a room Haruo is staying in, and he's like, I'm also filling in the doctor's role too.
Oh,
he's not just a biologist. Martin is a man of many talents.
He's like, he starts talking about the Hotua and like his perspective on how they came to be and what they evolved from. And I think he's like saying, well, their culture levels aren't really high, you know?
No, he says they are high.
Oh, does he say that they are
incredibly high?
What are culture levels?
Cultural levels.
You know, they've got a good culture.
If you're cultured, you got high culture levels.
Very cultured. Can I bring you into Martin's Corner for a second?
New segment of Podzilla,
Martin's Corner.
Please, yeah.
Two things I love about Martin is one, he does this pose all the time. It's like a thinking pose when you put your thumb and your finger, index finger on your chin, but he's wearing his like flight suit the whole time. So he's just holding it like a foot away from him on the flight suit's chin. I love it. But then Jaisha, I flipped over. Did you watch this movie in English again?
I did. I'm going to watch the last one in Japanese. I saw this one in English. Why? Did I miss out on something else?
Yeah, well, after I watched the movie, I went back. I turned on the English.
Whoa.
Purely to see what Martin sounded like. And I wrote down here, Martin's English voice actor sucks. Give me Tomokazu Sugita any day. You're telling me you haven't even heard Tomokazu Sugita voicing Martin.
Martin isn't all that. His voice
completely
is just kind of
changes the character. I dare I say you have not met Martin until you've turned on the Japanese subtitled version of
this
film.
All these background characters are still a blur for me because I think last episode I was talking about how much I liked Adam and his sacrifice.
He's like the blonde with the short cropped hair on the sides.
Yeah, but I got him confused with Leland, who was one of the captains in the first movie that sacrificed himself.
Okay.
So Leland I liked in the first movie. Adam is still around. He's just another like blonde character who's just behind Haruo the whole time.
Yeah, he doesn't do much in this one. But Martin's my blonde main man.
And even though you don't like Yuko, you have to say like the cliffhanger when she so slowly starts turning to nanometal, he isn't because the Hotua did something to him.
Yeah, it's something to do with those Mothra scales.
Yeah, like starts, but he doesn't actually succumb to it. But Yuko's fully turning nanometal. She's crying nanometal tears. And that's when the movie ends of like her in his arms, Mechagodzilla City kind of crumbling to the ground, yeah. Godzilla being free. It was quite a good twist, I think.
Yeah. Apart from that romance, I really do love Yuko's whole arc here. How she really takes to the new and improved nanomech that the Belusoludo create for her, which turns into the vultures.
The vultures.
The vultures are awesome. I love them, and they're like pink purple energy wings.
Again, some great music.
Whenever this movie kicks into gear with some sort of action scene, the music just blows me away.
When they turn on Mechagodzilla and the music starts up.
The Mechagodzilla theme.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yuko's whole arc here of becoming like one of the better Vulture pilots and being the one to test it all out and get familiar with it, and then be the one who really struggles as she's being taken over by the nanometal and seeming like she's going to have to sacrifice herself in the Vulture to defeat Godzilla once again. I think they did her whole quote unquote death, because I feel like it's confirmed, but they could easily do like the start of the next movie.
She'll be alive.
No, I want her to stay dead, because that was such an impactful death.
Impactful death. You don't need to see any more of the romance.
No. One kiss, that was all they needed.
What do you think of Godzilla? Because we actually see Godzilla Earth properly in action this time around. Again, it's pretty slow going. You only really see him at the end. I feel like this movie, the pacing was a bit better for me because we do get a lot of time with the characters. They do get time to breathe.
Mm.
But I got to say, it's still like 80% people pointing at monitors.
Yeah.
Pointing at screens. The same Godzilla diagram. It's like the movie is 80% planning and then a little bit of the actual action, a little bit of the mission. I'd way prefer it to just be like one solid planning scene and then the whole rest of the movie is the plan being put into action.
Yeah, or maybe even like with planning interspersed rather than leading up to it all.
The amount of times we're just in their little meeting room and they're pointing at this monitor with who knows what.
Yeah, because I think one of the trappings of this movie is that it kind of treads the same path that Planet of the Monsters did. That whole movie was like two-thirds them figuring out what they were doing, building up a plan. Last third was Godzilla.
Mm.
And it almost was like a whole siege fight the entire time.
Yeah.
And this movie ends up being the same. They come up with a really cool plan for Godzilla, but it does consist of the same, like an EMP that gets harpooned into him, which is basically the same as drilling.
They need to wait for the same like 10-second window.
They have to immobilize him, distract him with flying mix.
We had motorbikes last time. The hover squad last time.
Hover squad.
I missed the hover squad.
Hover squad or vulture squad?
The hover squad. You team vultures?
I'm team vultures. Get him in the earth, incapacitate him. It's like almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
In terms of how they defeat him, which is a little disappointing.
Mm.
Knowing where the next movie is headed, that there is going to hopefully be a proper kaiju fight. Yeah, it's just a little bit disappointing to see almost the same ideas and the same scenes, same play-by-play happening.
And they did enough to like make it different with everything outside of that plan being put into action. Like there's definitely some, again, the characters are doing different things. They are having a bit of an arc each this time around. We are seeing more of both sides of the aliens. Like, I do love the Ixif's like little zealot plot they have going on of like the main dude is gathering components for a ritual he's about to do, like ritual components. I love that kind of mysticism and magic being interspersed with mechs and Godzilla.
Mm.
So they do enough to change it up, but you're right. You look at it's like bare bones, same movie story structure.
And like, even just throwing it out there, it wouldn't have been hard to, in the last 10 minutes, just say, hey, last ditch effort, let's turn Mechagodzilla City into a whole mobile mech. If you got Mechagodzilla in there in the final act, I feel like it would have fit the theme of, you know, the Bullisaludo giving themselves to Mechagodzilla to try and fight directly against Godzilla. I feel like it would have fit a lot better than it does.
The Bullisaludo risking everything to become like the dominant monster, but in the end, the dominant monster is still just a city,
it's just
guys.
Buildings, guys.
You're just becoming your buildings.
To increase the neural processing, to do what? Create more bathroom stalls?
Yeah. But Godzilla's cool. Godzilla Earth is cool because we see, I think he becomes like almost burning Godzilla for a bit at the end of this.
Yeah.
Cool look. He's like his atomic breath's coming out of his, like his whole face, like in front of his nose, not even his mouth.
It's great. I popped down here. Let me find my note for it. But it was such an epic moment seeing Godzilla slowly start to turn like red and molten.
Mm.
Because this is, yeah, I want to say this is the first time since the Heisei movies that we have seen burning Godzilla come back. King of the Monsters hasn't come out at this point.
Yeah.
So at this point, especially if you're watching this in theaters for the first time, burning Godzilla has almost become a trope to the franchise.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, wait, burning Godzilla's in this.
Yeah, you're right.
It's such a cool moment.
I didn't even think about that timeline. Did this come out in theaters?
Yes.
But overseas, not in...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, this would have been really cool. That final battle in theaters, oh boy. His like blown out scream, like Godzilla's roar is so blown out and almost glitchy at times. I really liked it.
The sound effects here is fantastic.
And how about his beard?
I didn't even see his beard.
Yes.
Jayshah's Letterboxd review talked about his amazing, fantastic, feathery beard.
I'm jealous. He's got this, it's like the spiky, like craggly, like stalagmite beard coming off his chin.
I don't know what you're talking about. Godzilla Earth is clean shaven.
No. Those spikes on his chin, I'm jealous. I'll take them in a heartbeat.
He's got like barely a spike.
Nah.
Nary a spike to be seen.
Officially the first bearded Godzilla. It's official. And I mean, we should talk as well. I think there's a line in this movie, too, that all life on Earth now shares traits with Godzilla. Like he has actively affected every single thing on this planet. And I think it confirms the Servim to have come from Godzilla in some way. They are kind of his offspring, just like Phileas was.
Yeah.
So we've got new sons of Godzilla, I think, the Servim and Phileas, right alongside Manila and Junior. Godzuki, if we want to include him. Man, the Servim, the worm Servim.
The
worm vim.
There is a certain name that you could say there. The Wervim.
The Wervim? Yeah. They're pretty cool. I checked afterwards for like Godzilla anime trilogy memorabilia and figures on, again, Mighty Ape, the store we were talking about here in New Zealand. There's a $50 winged Servim.
There is not a Servim action figure.
Am I doing it? Am I buying a Servim figure for $50? It'll be shipped in 12 weeks, apparently. Put it above my desk.
Did you buy it?
No, I'm tempted.
I don't even think Godzilla fans would know what it is.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you have Hedorah up or you have Gigan up and it's like, yeah. It's real cool. Everyone will notice where that's from. Think it's awesome. And then you have Servim. Why is there a figure? Why am I tempted to buy it? Stay tuned. But I mean, should we go into some trivia, Micah? Do you have any bits and pieces about this film?
Yeah. You would have listened to the English dub for this. Hirua's English voice actor, Chris Noesi.
Yeah.
And I listened back to this as well. He's got so much emotion in those final scenes where Yuko's dying.
Yeah, again, I really like the English dub. Like, I think this is one of the strongest English dubs I've ever watched.
Oh, true.
And again, the sound mixing in this film is really good. I just think it's real cool to listen to. It didn't feel like I lost anything listening to the English dub, but obviously I lost
Martin. Yeah. The English voice actor reportedly got so upset by the ending that he actually cried while recording those final lines.
Hey.
Which is a point I'll give to the English dub, for sure. We mentioned last episode how there was a novelization, a prequel?
Two prequel books. And then there's a book based on each of the movies as well. So I think all up there's like five anime books?
Potentially.
Yeah.
I know there's two prequel books. There was one before the first movie. Which talked about some of the kaiju uprisings that happened.
I found English translations of them too, by the way.
Official?
unofficial like fan English translations of those novels.
Ooh.
So I'm really tempted to read them because, again, it apparently references so many random kaiju. We get more scenes of like Dagora attacking and Augur attacking, but then we get like Griffin from Latitude Zero attacking. We get like the mutant rats from Latitude Zero attacking.
That's only in the first book as well. So the second one's called Project Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
And we should get it because it includes some crazy scenes such as King Caesar versus Megalon.
Really?
Godzilla versus Gorath, with Batra trying to repel Gorath.
Gorath, the huge star.
The huge star from the hit movie Gorath. Two Titanosauruses. Gigan fights. We get a Mesa Cannon operator as one of our protagonists.
Really?
Like, these seem like pretty crazy out there stories and plot lines for what, random prequel novels.
Yeah, and I also read that Mothra actually makes an appearance in the prequel novels, and I think it actually details that she gives birth to an egg and how the Hotua tribe actually get the egg.
Yep. So, because it links in with this movie a little bit, I don't know if Mothra specifically makes an appearance, but...
In the third one, or in the books?
In the books, in the prequels.
Oh, okay.
But in this movie, yet the name Mothra is not said at all. In the prequel novel, Mothra is stated, and there's a big plot line about how there is a Mothra egg who gets transported to Japan from South America in the year 2048.
Whoa.
So it seems like there's a lot of cool links with not only this movie, but just like, who would have thought that King Caesar versus Megalon would happen in a prequel novel?
For the anime trilogy.
For the anime trilogy.
It is just so crazy that like, for the majority of these movies, it is kind of just Godzilla and the Servum.
Especially in the first one, we get glimpses of those other kaiju, but we never get the feeling that humanity was nearly being destroyed by them.
We just don't see enough of it. Yeah,
we don't see enough of it. It feels like Godzilla is the only like kaiju of substance that we see.
And then the forgettable little Servum dudes when they actually have built all these other monsters into the world that we just don't see.
I think Godzilla is the one to use his breath attack against Gorath to destroy it.
Crazy.
Godzilla's helping out humanity and they don't even acknowledge it.
Yeah. Hey, it's a shame.
It's a shame. We'll read it someday. And the other little piece I have here, so director Hiroyuki Sashita and writer Gen Urobuchi, might be Gen Urobuchi, they're both fans of the Godzilla series, and they were the ones in this movie who were really, really pushing for actual factual Mechagodzilla to show up. they loved some of the older movies with the kaiju mashups. Yeah, there were ideas to have him appear in the climax of this movie.
Oh, okay.
They were throwing out plots of him turning into like a 1 kilometer tall robot. Godzilla is 300 meters in this movie. So imagine a Mechagodzilla three times the size of Godzilla
Earth. Whoa.
Or transforming its various components into replicas of Godzilla's head and attacking Godzilla. But the co-director here, Kobun Shizuno, he rejected most of these ideas because he was never a big fan of monster movies, and he wanted to, I quote, avoid silly-looking monster battles.
Wow. So you got one of the directors of this that are all for the crazy old-school monster matchups, and you got one of them that's more classical anime, probably?
Yeah.
And it definitely does feel like a matchup of the two of these movies, to be honest.
In the section of this movie where the vultures came out, I read out a note here. I'm like, is this what Gundam is?
Yeah, it felt like it, right?
Because, yeah, it does feel like a merging of your classical mech, or like almost pilot protagonist-focused anime. And that monster idea is almost pushed to the wayside. We do get those views of the Servum and of Godzilla, but I feel like they're more seen in these movies as themes rather than actual characters.
Yeah. It's also real interesting because the writer that you mentioned, I don't know if it's Gen or Jen Urobuchi, he's actually like a Japanese novelist. And I think he's behind a lot of the like manga and anime for Psycho Pass and Fate Zero and a lot of these real darker, more depressing animes with a lot of like gore in them. And I think a lot of his fans were quite disappointed with this trilogy. It didn't really have that darker side to it. So it's interesting that you have these creative minds of these three
different creators, the two directors and the writer, with their own kind of passions and things they're prominently known for. And they're all kind of thrown together into this movie that doesn't seem like it has a clear vision.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely seems like the... And obviously we can't say anything for sure. This is just speculation here.
Yeah.
But it seems like none of their individual ideas or hopes for this movie ever properly came into fruition, because that creative process was just tugged in three different ways and ended up being split.
Yeah, feels like it.
Yeah, I would love the chance to see... I'd say even all three of these guys be a part of Godzilla projects again, because even Kōbun Shizuno, the one who was never a big fan of monster movies, I feel like if he went down a real, like a real specific path, just focusing on the human side of the story while having Godzilla as like a larger idea in the background, I feel like that could still be a really cool story. But in this movie, in these trilogy of movies, you're almost teased with so many ideas, like the actual Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
You're just disappointed when it never appears on the screen.
It's a lot of different ideas and plots that would be a lot more interesting if you completely committed just to them.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of fitting everything in together. Yeah. Interesting.
That's me for trivia. Do you want to go straight into final thoughts and reviews from here, Jasha?
Yeah, I've got some final thoughts. The title reveal at the start of this movie, you see like nanometal, nanometal.
Fantastic.
Making up the Godzilla logo. That was really cool. The music behind that was awesome.
Jason's a big music man.
Man, something about this anime trilogy. The tunes behind it, the Godzilla theme as well. They don't use any of the original music. It is kind of their own unique soundtrack, not influenced by anything of Godzilla's history, but I feel like it really works well for the character. It is very different, but it's very cool. And I wrote down, yeah, a lot of screens and pointing and yapping about what they're going to do instead of just doing it. I think that is my main negative, is it's just still a lot of talking, a lot of build up for a finale that's ultimately always real satisfying, but I just wish that build up time was shorter. Yeah. Both these movies are just like 75 minutes of build up for a sick finale. The vultures again were real cool when they've got the three vulture units actually going up against Godzilla.
The vulture squad
rise up. And yeah, the nanometal like mist they tried to kill Godzilla with. It was real cool when we saw the Mechagodzilla spikes kill the Servum.
Yeah, that was great.
There were a lot of times in this movie that I was like, hey, what a sick idea. Or hey, there was a lot of twists. Like the Billo Saludo going rogue, that really caught me by surprise. Yuko turning into nanometal at the end, that really caught me by surprise. Even the twist on Mechagodzilla being a city, I was surprised at how much they committed to that idea. So a lot that actually wowed me in this. I would probably give it 3 out of 5 culture levels. The culture levels for this movie, Micah. I think Martin would say that. Three out of five.
Yeah.
I still liked it. I think I prefer the first one overall. And I don't really know why. And this one might just feel a little bit more lackluster because it does repeat a lot of the first movie.
Yeah.
But I did really appreciate the different themes they explored, how much they started to flesh out each of these characters. And I still had a really good time with it. Like, I'm frankly surprised at how divisive this movie seems to be. Like, I don't know. I just do not understand how people just completely write this trilogy off and don't watch it when they're doing a watch through of the Godzilla series, or don't even mention
people skip it.
Yeah, which is really surprising, because I think it is such an interesting place for them to take the Godzilla story. So many themes are explored that they haven't explored before in these Godzilla movies. Again, like the whole idea of civilization creating its own monsters and what a world would look like if a piece of Godzilla flowed into every part of it.
Yeah, I had a quote here from the movie. Earth's current ecosystem is structured to serve under Godzilla. Earth chose not humans, but it. Yeah, this whole idea that like Earth itself is building itself up around that higher force, Godzilla. Yeah.
So I had a blast with it, and I do just wish they honed in on those ideas a bit better. Like, I would have loved to see some of Gen Urobuchi's like darker side into it. Like, give us some more gore. Make these characters go to some darker places. Like, I would have loved it not to feel kind of generic anime, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It does end up feeling very bland because it doesn't stray too far in one direction.
Mm. But I do see the little gems in it, and those highlights I'm 100% behind. Yeah. What do you think?
That's great. No. I like this a lot, like a surprising amount better than the first movie.
Hey.
Obviously, it does tread a lot of the same paths, a lot of the same themes, but as its own movie, I do think they throw out a lot of real cool things here. Some other notes that I popped down just real quick. The Hotua tribe at the start of this movie. Did you see their ladders?
No, I didn't see their ladders.
The structural integrity of these ladders is terrible.
Probably puts their culture levels down a bit for you.
Yeah. I don't think they're quite at three culture levels. Yeah, Godzilla Earth's attacks. We saw like a brief couple snippets in the last movie, but here we see like some crazy scenes. There was one where Godzilla's first heat ray attack in this one. They put up some of Mechagodzilla's city's defenses, these reflectors.
Yeah.
And he hits all these beams and it strays off into five different like shards of his beam. It was my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, that was
visually
cool.
It was crazy impressive.
Reminded me of like Shin Godzilla's attack a little bit, of how much it fractured.
Yeah. Just amazing visual stuff going on here. At one point, I think they said that Godzilla's heat ray attack was equal to, what was it, 3 terawatts? I did a little back of the napkin math using Back to the Future gigawatts as my basis here. Godzilla's heat ray is equivalent to approximately 3,000 lightning strikes at the same time.
Hey.
Which is wild.
That's crazy. Oh my gosh.
And his attack, like, there's a good portion here where Godzilla's intentionally not using his long range attack on the city, but he is using it on the vultures. Mm. And it's just like, you do feel such a sense of danger and fear.
It's devastating, eh?
Whenever he lets one of those blasts off. A couple other things was, I love the sound effects in this movie. The scene where Hiroa ends up in his vulture shooting the Mechagodzilla command center, their choice to cut all like sound effects and dialogue there and just have the music, it makes for such an emotional scene. I really, really love how they did it. And even in that post-credit scene, when they start alluding to Godzilla, they use like the classic reversal themes and sound effects for it, like going back in time to that conversation.
Yeah. Haruo's like glitched scream at the start of it too, after
yeah,
the credits.
Like just some really, really cool, like you said, just gems of ideas. And you got to give huge props to some of these other departments here. Sound effects team in particular just knocked it out of the park. All in all, I did have like a really good time with this movie. There are obviously some parts that I would change. Obviously, it would be so much cooler to have Mechagodzilla in here. But I do like where they were trying to go for with having this AI-powered city. And even apart from that, the human characters had a real step up here. That whole final act where, what was it? You had like, they had only tested one of the vultures, so they couldn't use the other two. But they ended up getting one of the Bullisaludo and Harua to manually pilot them. I feel like that started a really cool chain of logical events of, hey, it does make sense there for the Bullisaludo to then be like, if we give ourselves to Mechagodzilla and, what was it, like use their lances to pierce his back.
Yeah, the plan has more of a chance of winning.
And I love that plan. It would have worked. Mm. It's a legitimate way to defeat Godzilla and to save the Earth. I love how you have these different parties vying for different ideas. The only other thing I could say was, if Mothra doesn't show up in the next movie, it does feel very weird to have the Hotua civilization and like those talks around Mothra to be there.
I am giving it, a lot of leniency because I hope that that stuff will come to a conclusion in the third movie, because the front of this movie was setting up the Hotua tribe. And if this was kind of just a standalone movie, it wouldn't make sense in the narrative to build that up and then not have that something to do with the conclusion.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that we get something cool to do with Mothra or the Hotua in the third movie.
Yeah, I haven't heard of... I've only heard of Ghidorah in the third movie. I don't know if Mothra is there.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see where it all comes, it goes.
Exactly. Because, I mean, we should just mention Ghidorah is teased at the end of Ghidorah this movie with the Exif whispering it into Haruo's ear as kind of their savior almost, or the monster that destroyed their world. I'm not too sure if they like him or hate him.
That was a real cool plot point as well. They said that he was the monster that destroyed their Earth. Their planet.
He was almost the monster their civilization created?
Yeah, the one that rose to the top.
Yeah.
And they don't even say his name now for fear that something will come from it. And I love what Mithfis told Haru in the end there. It's like, don't say his name, but you should know it, because if you're ever in so much fear because of Godzilla or a death or anything around you, just think of that name, because everything else pales in comparison to how dangerous that name is. So it sets up the third movie real cool.
Yeah, it's cool how the Billow Saludo get their time to shine in this one. Then it sounds like the Exif are going to get their time to shine in number three.
I felt kind of ambivalent after the first movie, but after the second movie, I'm actually really excited to see where things head.
Nice.
I think this movie's culture level is 3.5.
Whoa, that much of an improvement for you?
Yeah, going from 2 to 3.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a huge step up. I think that they took the criticisms that the public said and they did some good stuff with it.
Mm. And I'm really excited for the next movie, The Planet Eater, because I think it is universally stated as the best of the trilogy. I know a previous guest of our show, Big O, good mate of ours, really loves it.
So one of the best Godzilla movies, period, I think he said.
So there's a lot of passion behind that one. So I'm excited to see what they bring to the table.
Yeah. Also, Planet Eater is just an epic name.
Yeah. I think I would have preferred it, because you know how the first movie's Planet of the Monsters? Planet, and then this one's City.
If they had Planet in all three of the movies.
Yeah, or this one's City, and then they do another place for the third one. Mm. The Universe. I don't know. That's Les Lane.
The Universe.
But a place, or all of them Planet. Anyway, should I go through some of our listeners' reviews?
Yeah, we missed out on the last episode, so I'm curious what everybody else thought of City on the Edge of Battle.
So we have an Instagram message that we got here from Kensuke, and Kensuke says, I just wanted to chime in on the anime trilogy, that though I get the ideas explored were very interesting, the execution was so bland. The art style and characters, especially Godzilla, was so drab and boring. I would have loved to see the story explored as a 70s sci-fi with tokusatsu, Star Trek, original series sets, and special effects. I feel like that would have really livened up the story.
Can you imagine if there was a modern Godzilla movie that came out and they went back to Suitmation, making the movie seem like it was 70s?
Yeah. Do anything in the Star Trek style, I think it's going to be improved, you know? But I was thinking, I still am not 100% behind these animations. All the character models still blend together for me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of metal. There's a lot of, especially in this one, I guess it was because of Mechagodzilla, but a lot of the same buildings and infrastructure.
Same assets.
And I, man, I'd kill to see this story done with Studio Ghibli art style. I think that would have been pretty awesome.
Hand-drawn animation.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been hard to do, but it would have been pretty cool. We've got a Letterboxd review from Joe Jazzy. And Joe says, I sure hope you like people pointing at sci-fi screens and discussing military strategies, because, wow, that is most of this one. Like the first film in the trilogy, this has some amazing ideas, but really fumbles the telling of them and ends up feeling really boring. It's too bad. Some of these plot points could have made for an incredible film if it wasn't this one. A long build up to get to the good stuff again, but it really is pretty good stuff once you get there. This one has a big step up in sound design from the last film, and there are a few key moments where it sounds phenomenal. And Joe gives it 2.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
Yeah, a lot of sci-fi screens.
a lot.
I like it.
You like sci-fi screens?
Yeah, point at a screen, I'm happy.
I guess, yeah, me and you have grown up like with what Kintsugi mentioned before, with Star Trek and loving games like Halo and sci-fi being kind of our bread and butter for the stuff we were real fans of growing up. So just give me a sci-fi setting in general. I'll probably find some enjoyment in it, like no matter what.
Yeah, well, I think even... I said it in last episode, but even the design for the ship and even when they are pointing at the screens, I still love like the art design behind how they think about and create these like holographic technology.
Mm.
Like even those little 2D like hand holographic monitors that they have that they can control in their fingers. I still absolutely adore those. Those are fantastic.
Yeah.
There is a lot of pointing at screens, but I think there is some merit to the way that they portray those things as well.
And again, it's just so cool that we get a Godzilla movie in the sci-fi genre, like flat out.
Full on sci-fi.
It's for sci-fi. It's pretty awesome.
We have another message here from Liam Itnodov. City on the Edge of Battle, an improvement over the first film.
Whoa.
The reinterpretation of Mechagodzilla as an all-consuming machine was interesting, and it was great to see how humanity had adapted via Mothra to this new world. It can drag a bit in the middle, but it's worth sticking through. 4.445 out of 5. Liam, oh, you and your ratings.
4.
I eat them up.
4.445 out of 5. I love it.
We also have Jake or Morshu, who says, how is it that still to this day, humans in Godzilla movies don't think twice about aliens in Mechagodzilla? 2 out of 5.
Yeah, should have seen it coming. You guys should have seen it. Those aliens were obviously there to take over the world to begin with, and Godzilla and Kaiju happened to be there.
That's the Ballistaluda's 20,000-year plan. Yeah. They planted the seeds.
They're always going to assimilate. Our last message here is from Greg, or G. Kira. And Greg says, picking up where the other film left off, the second anime film expands the universe of the series by introducing a surviving tribe of humans that worship a dead Mothra, and reintroducing Mechagodzilla, now a city of living nanometal. I definitely like the build-up in this film more. The natives are interesting, and the Mechagodzilla city is far creepier than anything else seen in the series so far. Unlike the first film, which paints Godzilla as the clear villain, the enemy here turns out to be the Bilusolado, the technology-obsessed aliens who eventually turn on the humans in order to defeat Godzilla. You don't see the betrayal coming, and it's very eerie how the nanometal tries to absorb Haruo. And the actions of Haruo, Godzilla, and the Bilusolado leave the film in one hell of a cliffhanger. And I have to give a shout out to the sound design in this film. More than the last one, the sci-fi sound effects sound awesome. Makes you wonder how it would have sounded in theaters. I give Godzilla City on the Edge of Battle 3.5 praiseworthy eggs out of 5. It all leads to a climactic final film where the fate of humanity is decided and the question is asked, can Godzilla Earth defeat a devourer of planets?
Oh.
Ooh.
That's the question.
Yeah, it was that twist with the Bilusolado at the end, trying to absorb them into nanometal. Doesn't get better. Greg alluded to it there, but next episode we're going to be capping off this Godzilla anime trilogy with Godzilla the Planet Eater. And the short little synopsis for that one goes, bow down and worship the golden demise. With no means of defeating Godzilla Earth, mankind watches as King Ghidorah, clad in a golden light, descends on the planet. The heavens and earth shake once again as the war moves to a higher dimension.
Kaiju fight?
Hey, are we finally going to get a kaiju fight?
I've seen the design for Ghidorah in this one, and I gotta say, it makes me so pumped for this next movie.
I love all this talk about like dimensions and golden light, and it sounds like almost like he is this deity.
Yeah, this like heavenly being.
Yeah. I cannot wait to cap it off. So we'll be back with that on Wednesday, back into our usual time. I think we will have one more Saturday release like we did with this episode sometime later down the track, but we'll let you know as we get close to Godzilla X Kong. So thanks for sticking with us for multiple episodes this week, guys.
But anyway,
Micah, did you? We've got our monitor here in our P-Force headquarters.
Yeah.
And we each have a tracker on us. When you join P-Force, when this you join true. The yeah. Podzilla department, you get a tracker implanted into you. It's just something G-Force does.
It's normal. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Slim got one implanted into him when he joined P-Force. And it's blinking. Here, you see this on the monitor?
Yeah.
It's showing he's back on the island here, Monster Island with us. But it's
Nice.
Not the outline of a person anymore. It's saying he's got like nanometal city-like properties.
Slim City?
Do you see that out the window there? That metallic city that's kind of like forming?
Hold on, when did that get there?
Wait, is Slim turning into a nanometal city on Monster Island?
Tune into Godzilla next week to find out if Slim City...
Slim City.
Slim City. We'll take over Monster Island.
Thanks for listening to Podzilla. Join our Discord server, tag us on Letterboxd, and follow us on socials at PodzillaPod. Links are all in our show notes. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/podzilla and get access to extended cuts of every episode and the occasional bonus ep. Huge thank you to Cassie Celine for our seasonal podcast art. And just a disclaimer that all music and additional audio used in this episode belong entirely to the Toho Company.
I still don't know whether to say Ghidorah or Ghidorah.
Geese, Ghidorah.
Geese.